go. All right, Wednesday morning Bible study on the art of dying. This is class six, I think, right? Sixth meeting. So as you've already noticed, we have a special guest here, Julie Burgess from the Lutheran Foundation. She's also associated with the Church Extension Fund and the district. But more about that in a minute, in a little bit. First, I'm going to cover the Bible study portion, and then she's got some really good information to share with us, okay? So many of you have been here the past number of weeks. You still have your handout. If you don't, I've got more up here. So the art of dying. So 2 weeks ago, we started talking about the temptations that the devil confronts us with all the time, but especially when we're approaching death. And the first one that's included in this book, written by some unknown Catholic monk prior to the time of Luther. The first one there on page 41, you'll see the little picture there in the title, it's Temptation Concerning Faith. And that is doubt. The devil tries to get in our heads and say, how do you know you're saved? How do you know there really is a heaven? How do you know Jesus is real or really did die for you? So it's temptation against faith that confronts us all the time, but especially when we're approaching death. And then there was some inspiration of the angel, I would say the Holy Spirit, concerning faith, to know that, and the answer I would say from a Lutheran standpoint is baptism. Remember your baptism. God claims you, and that is dependable. So don't have doubts. Don't let the devil tempt you into doubts. Last week we talked about the second one, which is despair. So kind of there on page 51 and 52, despair meaning your sins are too great. How can Jesus forgive them? You've committed too many sins, and they're too great of sins. And by the way, you haven't done enough good things either. So you're not going to be saved. So the devil's trying to drive you into despair. Okay? Another common temptation. Well, of course, we know the answer to that. And I would say the answer is like what Luther said, is to say to the devil, you're right. My sins are too great. And you're right. I haven't done enough good things. But Jesus did it for me. So you look to Christ and what he has done for you. So let's launch into today, the third temptation. It's on page 57 there is where it starts. It says, the temptation of the devil concerning impatience. Why there's a picture of a table overturned, I don't know. I guess if you get impatient, you start tossing furniture. I'm not really sure.
You never know.
Yeah, I don't know. Right.
Maybe it's from when he did it in the temple.
Yeah, maybe. That could be. So turn the page, page 59. These are short chapters, so I'm going to read. And by the way, look at that little woodcut there from back in the Middle Ages. So that's going to, I think, relate to part of what we're going to read here in the temptation of the devil. So let me read just a little bit and then talk about it. Third, the devil tempts the sick person through the impatience that arises out of profound illness, saying, why do you endure such heavy suffering, which is intolerable for every creature and thoroughly useless to you? Not even for the sake of exacting punishment for your faults should such great suffering rightly occur. For it is written, in punishments the more benign interpretation should prevail. What is even more aggravating, no one has compassion for you, which no one doubts is against all reckoning. And although your friends may express compassion in words, nevertheless in their minds they desire greatly your death on account of the goods you will relinquish. Indeed, after your soul casts off your body, they intend to pay their respects for scarcely the span of a day for the sake of all the possessions you have left behind. Does the devil sometimes get in our heads in that way? Nobody cares about me. They just want my stuff.
No, right? The other way around. Nobody wants your stuff when you die.
No.
They're all the good stuff.
Get rid of that stuff from Grandma. We don't want it anymore, right? Well, the first part of this temptation that the devil confronts us with, the third line down there, why do you endure such heavy suffering, which is intolerable for every creature and thoroughly useless to you? Yes, the devil does get into our heads, not just when we're approaching death, but even now. Why am I suffering this way? Why am I suffering the way I'm suffering? Look at all those other people. They don't have the kind of suffering I have. Or when it comes to cancer, which is so pervasive. Why are they healed of their cancer? Their cancer's in remission, but mine is not. Or why is mine so severe? And so then we get impatient with the suffering that we are burdened with, okay? So that's part of the devil's temptation. And then, yes, the second part there is he focuses us on stuff, possessions. Does it really matter? Who cares? You're going to be in heaven. Well, there is some reason to be concerned about your stuff, your possessions, your assets. And that's to pass them along for good reasons. That's part of what Julie's going to talk about. How to make sure that those things go in the places you want them to go, to your heirs and to ministries and charities and to your church. Okay? So these are two common temptations that the devil will confront you with for the purpose of getting you to be impatient, getting you to want to rush through things. That next sentence there. With these and similar tactics, the devil strains to lead the person toward impatience. Yes, we are all confronted with impatience a lot of times. Page 60. Turn the page, right at the top. For most, and especially those dying unprepared and unjustly, their illness renders them impatient and grumbling. This can occur to such an extent that suffering excessively and impatiently, they may seem out of their mind and lacking good sense, as happens in many cases. And then look at the footnote there. It must be noted that delirium, a syndrome involving disturbed consciousness and other cognitive changes, is common in dying persons and not generally subject to moral analysis. The person could be truly virtuous but unable to exercise patience in the moment because of changes in mental status from severe illness. We would agree with that. Okay, as Lutherans, we agree with that. So, yes, first of all here, that the devil is tempting us to impatience and grumbling. You don't have to be confronted with death. I grumble all the time. Ask my family, my wife. No, don't.
And they don't listen.
And they don't listen? Yeah, right. Yes, we all grumble, right? What did the Israelites do out in the desert? And it says it uses that word all the time. They grumbled against God. That happens all. Does that mean we're getting close to death? Well, in a certain sense, yeah. We're all progressing in that direction, right? And then a little side note here about delirium, or we might say dementia, or some of those other diseases. It is true, I have had, not a lot, maybe once or twice, somebody asked me about somebody, you know, spouse, grandma, grandpa, somebody who's in dementia, and they don't, all of you probably visited or have relatives or somebody that's experienced that, right? And I've had the case too. I've walked in to visit somebody, they don't recognize me. I even have my collar on, they don't recognize me. And they barely know who they are or where they are. Pastor, is grandma still saved? Does she still have faith? She doesn't even recognize anything around her. This understanding here is absolutely true. That's not them. That's the disease. They still have faith down deep inside there, given to them in baptism, reinforced through memory and through church and through scripture and maybe through the Lutheran school, if they went to Lutheran school. Thank goodness for memory work in Lutheran schools still, right? Because, and you guys have all heard this before multiple times from Pastor Kordokas and myself. So I visited somebody who's got dementia. They barely know who I am. And yet I start praying the Lord's Prayer.
And they know.
And they start saying it. Mouthing the words or actually speaking the words with me. It's down deep in there. Mm-hmm. So if you are concerned about yourself or somebody you know that might be drifting into dementia, and are they still of faith? Yes, they are. Absolutely. Okay, they've been baptized, and the fact that they lose track of who they are or people around them, that's the disease. That's not a lack of faith. Okay, just keep that in mind. All right, let me go on a little bit. I want to leave as much time as I can for Julie. Good inspiration of the angel concerning patience. Oh, by the way, that woodcut there on that other page. So notice how there's the woman there with the plate and the cup and the people there who've got their backs turned. They're not even paying attention. I think that's supposed to be a representation of people don't care. I think that's what it's supposed to be showing. Okay, good inspiration from the angel or from the Holy Spirit concerning patience. Let me read a little bit again. Against the third temptation of the devil, the angel gives good inspiration, saying, O man, turn your mind away from impatience, through which the devil seeks nothing other than the defeat of your soul with his own deadly prodding. For through impatience and murmuring, the soul is lost, whereas through patience it is preserved. As Gregory attests, no one who murmurs inherits the kingdom of heaven. Thus, do not let your sickness, which is slight compared with what you merit, weary you, since it is a sort of purgatory before death when tolerated as it should be, patiently and willingly with gratitude. I'm going to pause there a minute. I think that's a great statement. I grumble too, about why am I suffering like this? This is more than I deserve. Look at those other people. They don't have to suffer like this. Look at those non-believers. They're not suffering. And yet, really, the truth is, you're not suffering as much as you do deserve. Right? We're all sinful. We deserve a lot more suffering than any of us is encountering. So that's a great point there. And then the second thing I want to point out here is he says, don't let it weary you, since it's a purgatory before death. Well, there's a use of the word purgatory that we as Lutherans can agree with. All right. You know, the whole idea of purgatory, of course, it's a Catholic myth, really, does not come from the Bible. If we wanted to talk outside for a while for where that whole concept of purgatory came from, there's some history behind it. But we would say, does God allow us to go through suffering before we die as a sort of purgatory to kind of refocus us or cleanse us or to strengthen us? Yes, that's what he does. The suffering we have in life and before death is for that purpose, to point you to Christ, to strengthen you in faith, to draw you back into a life of prayer, for those types of things, for strengthening you. So in that sense, maybe this is the Lutheran version of using the word purgatory. Maybe that's how we could use purgatory, okay? Is the suffering we encounter in life. All right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Everybody with me? I'm talking kind of fast, and I haven't even had that much coffee yet. All right. Continuing on there for a little bit. For gratitude is necessary not only for things that give consolation, but also for things that come as affliction. Gratitude for affliction? As Gregory says, mercifully, God applies temporal chastisement so as not to inflict eternal punishment. Augustine says, Lord, burn and cut here that you may spare me in eternity. Hence, let no tribulations disturb you, since they show that Christ does not wish to abandon you. Accordingly, Augustine says, the evils that punish us here compel us to go to God. So if you're becoming impatient because of suffering, one of the things to do is remember, God doesn't let you suffer beyond what you're able to bear. Right? I looked it up, 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13. So God will only give you as much as you can handle, and he will give you a way out, Paul says. So that's the first thing. Secondly, there is a purpose in all of suffering. So someone last night, Andy Copey actually, he brought this up from Romans chapter 5. This is another verse. So write down 1 Corinthians 10, 13 there in your margin or in your book, so you on your page so you have it. Because God will not let you suffer beyond what you can handle. But then here's another one. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 to 5. This shows us that there is purpose in everything. More than that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. So Romans 5, 3 to 5. So that reminds us, too, that God does have a purpose in suffering. What are those purposes? Pastor, how can God want us to suffer? Well, remember, first of all, he does take away the vast majority of suffering that the devil would throw at you. So you're not even close to what the devil would try to inflict upon you. That's the first thing. Secondly, why does God allow some suffering to sneak through? It's for your benefit. I don't know how many of you may remember, a handful of years ago, I preached a Thanksgiving sermon, and then I published it in the Christ Times, of being thankful for problems. What? We should be thankful for problems? That's what this monk says here. He says, is it Augustine? No, it's right there. Gratitude is necessary not only for things that give consolation, but for things that come as affliction. Be thankful for afflictions? That's hard. I can't do that. Why should we be thankful for afflictions? Because they actually are intended by God for our blessing and our benefit. One is right there what Paul says. Suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character. Character produces hope. God allows you sometimes to suffer in certain ways in order to strengthen you. Right? Sometimes it's to drive you back into prayer. Sometimes it's for you to be a witness to others. And, I have had people say, well, Pastor, look at me. I'm in an assisted living. I can't get out of bed. I need help with everything. What possible purpose could God have for me to continue suffering in this state? And I always give them two answers right off the top of my head. I say, first of all, you can pray. No matter where you are, what state you're in, or how much help you may need, you're laying in bed, you can pray. Pray for your family, pray for your church, pray for your country, pray for your pastor. I need your prayers. Okay? Secondly, what can you do? You can be a witness to those who are caring for you. The nurses, the aides that come in to help and, take care of you and take care of your needs. Through your attitude, maybe through your thankfulness to them, maybe outright speaking about Jesus, in the actual, talking to them. You can be a witness to those who come in to help you. There's two purposes right there. Pastor, why doesn't God take me home? That's impatience. Why doesn't God take me home? I'm ready. I've been ready now for a long time. God has purposes for you. And there's two right off the top of my head that he has for everybody. And of course, God is strengthening you. He's trying to make you stronger in faith. Some of you have heard me say this little tongue-in-cheek comment that I've mentioned this a few times. So am I becoming like Pastor Q, repeating my stories? I don't know, maybe. I've heard some of his stories a couple times. I think I can tell his stories. You can tell him I said that, by the way. But here's one that I think I've repeated. I said, sometimes I'll pray, God, please don't let me have any troubles. My faith is strong. I'll keep praying to you, I promise. Don't let me have any problems in life. That's one of the reasons he lets you have challenges and problems in life, is to drive you back to prayer, to reinvigorate your devotional life, to draw you back to the church if you've been drifting away, those types of things. So, yeah, sometimes I actually have prayed that. God, don't let me have any bad things happen. I promise I'll be faithful. All right, let me pause a minute because I need more coffee. Any questions? Yeah, Ellen.
Many years ago, I ran across a Bible passage that says, "Thank God in all things." And I thought, what? And then I realized it didn't say for all things, it said in all things.
Ah.
We wouldn't be saying, "Thank you for letting this happen to me." Be more like, "Thank you for being there with me to get through it."
That's a great point. So it's not that we're thankful for the troubles in life, but we're thankful that in the midst of the troubles in life, God is there helping us through it, giving us patience. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, Julie?
Didn't share this last night, but one of the things I've always, last number of years, have said, instead of asking God why, ask God what. What are you teaching me through this?
There you go. Okay. Instead of asking why, ask what. Yeah, Sandy and then Andrea.
I remember I always worried. I have a cousin in South Bend who was not a Christian, never went to church, anything, and when she passed away, I just hated the idea of going to her funeral, knowing that she, and only when I got there I found out she had found Christ before, and
okay.
And that she said, the pastor that was doing the thing said that she was so just sorry that she had not brought her sons up in the church.
Wow, yeah, sure.
It was such a relief.
Yeah, right. Andrew?
Sometimes I think the bad thing you might think you're going through is like a learning lesson.
Right.
You know, it just makes you stronger.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of like a nightmare you're having. I personally, when I'm having a nightmare and think it's kind of evilish, I start saying the Lord's Prayer out loud in my dreaming.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, and it's all better. So.
Yes.
And so, when I talk in my sleep, I'm usually saying the Lord's Prayer.
Good for you. You guys have heard me say this before, and I'm sure other pastors too, but yes, when you're troubled or upset or anxious, pray the Lord's Prayer out loud. So your own ears can hear it, plus if there happens to be spiritual forces in the room, they hear it too. And you know the second best prayer, you guys have heard me say this a lot, what's the second best prayer you can pray?
Kyrie.
Kyrie, yes. Lord have mercy. What a great prayer. Short and simple, powerful. Blind Bartimaeus, and he was healed when he prayed that prayer. All right, let me wrap this up. So on page 64 and 65 on your photocopies there, the last sentence of that first paragraph on 64, direct your gaze toward Christ, the most patient one, and all the saints, even to death. Yes, put Christ before your eyes. When you're feeling impatient, when you're feeling troubled, look to Christ. Was he troubled? Yeah, greatly troubled on the cross. Was he patient? Oh yeah, he waited. Note that when the sick person perceives that he is tempted by impatience, he should consider first how harmful impatience is. Yeah, you can do that, but I think we already know that. Second, he should consider that patience must be vigilantly preserved. First, because it is essential, and then the top of page 65. Second, because it is useful. Is patience essential and useful? Absolutely! Is it essential to preserve your faith? Yes, the impatient people will grow weaker in faith. So yes, you want to be patient. Is it useful? Yes, it keeps pointing you to Jesus. Look what he suffered through. I can get through this, and God promises it won't be more than I can handle. All right? And I would especially say, to add a little bit of more Lutheran context to this, although this is pretty good. We would agree with this Catholic monk on all of this. But remember, 1 Corinthians 10:13 and Romans 5:3-5. God is strengthening you, and he has purpose for you, even in the midst of your suffering and your impatience. Okay? All right. We're just about a half an hour. Questions, comments? Any discussion for just a bit, a minute or two? Yeah, Ann?
So, if we were to compare our sufferings in death to what Jesus did, we're only suffering because of our own sins. He suffered for the sins of all.
Yes, exactly. He suffered for the sins of all. That's right. All right, so I want to introduce Julie Burgess. She and I know each other a little bit from my home church that I grew up in, Trinity in Utica. We crossed paths there for a number of years. And she was a Lutheran teacher for a while, and then got into financial issues. And now she's a counselor, I guess that's what you are, right?
Planning counselor
for the LCMS Foundation. So she's going to talk to you a little bit about that. And also Church Extension Fund and the Michigan District. And here's a wonderful thing, which she'll tell you as well. Her services are free. So she can come and give you some advice and oversight, or just review what you have and do it all for free, right?
All for free.
Yay! All right, Julie.
If it's free, it's for me, right? Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be here with all of you, and what a great Bible study.
Thank you.
Some wonderful lessons there about what we go through in suffering. So today, I'm not going to talk to you about suffering. Hopefully, I'm going to talk to you about how to be prepared for when God calls you home. So that's what our topic is, and it's Lifetime Plan for Giving. I'm going to share more about this, and our tagline at the foundation, as you can see, is provide for the people you love and the ministries that you care about. And as Pastor Measle said, my journey in my ministry in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has been very varied, very varied. I've been a Lutheran teacher. I've been in family life ministry, children's ministry. I think I was a children's ministry director when I was at Trinity.
That's right.
My husband is also in education. He's the principal at St. Paul Lutheran School in Ann Arbor. So we live in the Ann Arbor area, and I was family life director there about 4 years ago when I stopped doing that and started on with the foundation. So I am a certified gift planning counselor. I've been trained fully through the foundation. And the foundation's home is in St. Louis in the International Center where Synod offices are. So anyway, and I am from Southern Illinois, and this is my family. This is my mom. Yeah, not just well. I have four brothers and sisters. My mom and dad. This was their 65th wedding anniversary. This summer will be their 69th wedding anniversary. But my mom now has dementia. She's in the last stages of dementia. My dad's 92. He's got beehives. He makes his own blackberry wine. He's still pretty active. But that is five of us kids with our spouses. There are 15 grandchildren. 12 of those are married with spouses. And then in this picture, I think there's 20 great-grands, and now there's number 24 is due in June. So all Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod trained. My dad was a Lutheran teacher, also went to Concordia, Chicago, or River Forest. That's where my husband and I met, too. So just the blessings of God and just a grateful heart, even though right now it's kind of tough with some stuff with my mom, but God's still good.
Which one is you?
Which one is me? I'm right there. I'm holding, this is one of my granddaughters, and that's the other one. And this is my daughter, my husband, our son Nathan, and our son Jared. Yeah. So, you see a little resemblance.
I told Julie yesterday, we're looking for a family life minister if she ever wants to come back.
So, just to give you a little bit of background on the LCMS Foundation, you're probably very familiar with CEF and Michigan District doing great things here in our state of Michigan. The LCMS Foundation became partners with Church Extension Fund in Michigan District. And we've been around since 1958. And we provide comprehensive charitable gift planning expertise in this. So there's 22 gift planners like me throughout the United States working in seminaries and different districts, working with the LCMS Foundation. And we just go around and help Lutheran members make sure your estate plans are properly set up. We see a lot of them that there's some fine-tuning that needs to happen there. And making sure that there are gifts not only to ministry, we want gifts to go to your family. We're not taking that away. But we also want to help people see how to make a gift to your church or how to make a gift to other ministries or charities that might be near and dear to your heart. So that's where I come in as your gift planning counselor. So I just mentioned this. We're in partnership together. That's why everything is free to you. I'm not selling anything. All the services that our attorneys at the foundation offer for charitable gift planning documents, that's all free to you. And that is thanks to the Michigan District Church Extension Fund and the LCMS Foundation. So here in Michigan, yes, we want to support the great ministries that we have. The areas of support that we offer, obviously in gift planning, that's why I'm here, but we also offer investment services. Now, investment services are for charitable planning, so that would be endowments, right? Charitable plans that maybe you put in place, and after you're called home to heaven, you need somebody like the foundation to administer, to be the trustee, to distribute the funds to your kids, and then to ministry. That's what we do. You can't go to the foundation to get an IRA, right, or an investment account to get a rate of return back. That's where you go to CEF. But for the foundation, we offer investment services for the charitable part of investing. And then also educating, collaborating. We do trainings around different states and different areas, seminaries, helping other people learn the best practices about gift planning. So we train other organizations. We'll come to the LCMS Foundation because we have really fine-tuned this whole area of gift planning to where I'll be at a training in St. Louis or some other part of the country, and in there will be attorneys, there will be financial advisors, there will be insurance companies that'll come to the foundation and say, how do you guys do this? Because we do it very well, and we practice that over a number of years to make sure that our best interest is for what our Lutheran members are looking for and what God has on your heart, not what we want, but what you want. And then marketing. We have a great marketing team that puts together all these great pieces of material, so all part of that. So Ephesians 2 verse 10 is one of our favorite verses at the foundation. And you know, Ephesians 2 verses 8 and 9 talks about grace and that we're saved by grace, we're saved by God's riches at Christ's expense. And that's something that we don't deserve. You know, we were just talking about God's mercy, where God withholds what we do deserve, and that's death and damnation. But he gives us what we don't deserve through his grace and his love towards us. And then that Ephesians 2 verse 10 goes on to say, and we're God's workmanship. Because of that grace God gave to us, we are his workmanship. God created us, he formed us, and he has gone ahead of us to do these good works, and we get to follow him. We don't do those good works to say, look how great I am. We do good works to say, look at God, and look at all that God has done for us. And that's what the Bible study was about today. So that's a great lead-in for all of this. So let's talk a little bit about estate planning. You may have gone through this already. Estate planning is where you are really just organizing your blessings, right? Organizing all the things that you are thankful for. And hopefully that's a number of things. But usually with estate planning, we're organizing more about the financial areas, right? Those assets, the money. Yeah, sometimes we have to talk about that. We're going to get that organized. But then also, you might have created a will or a trust. And so real quickly, let me explain the difference between a will and a trust. And you may be clear on this. A will is going to give direction. A will will name a personal representative, and that person will wrap up your estate, pay all your final expenses. The will is going to say, you know, who the powers of attorney are, right? That's what a will does. Now, here's the thing that people don't always understand with a will. Is a will is not a form of an estate plan where you want money to pass through the will. Why do we want the money to always to go through the will? What does a will have to go through also?
Probate.
And we're not that probate's terrible, but if we can keep from tying up our estate in probate and get it to our family quicker than later, sooner than later, let's do that. So that just means planning. So if you just have a will, that's okay. Having a will is a good thing. It's going to give some direction for your personal representative. But a will, here's the will, giving the direction, but all of your assets, like your life insurance, your investments, like your IRAs, your stocks, your mutual funds, CDs, right, all of that, your house. By the way, in Michigan, we have a great tool called a Lady Bird deed, right? And that's what you put your house in. Now, some of you are saying, well, we have a deed and we have joint tenants on our deed and I have the kids on the deed. I'm just going to caution you with that. I've heard I do these presentations with a lot of attorneys also. And a lot of attorneys will tell you, if you have your kids as joint tenants on your deed, if they go through a divorce, lawsuit, an accident, or they get sued in any way, file for bankruptcy, guess what is part of their asset? Your home. Yeah, dangerous thing to do. So what Michigan has, there's only about 6 states that offer this life-enhanced estate deed or ladybird deed. And that's where, yes, you can put your kid, one of your kids, or usually attorneys try to tell you, be careful though, because they all have to agree on what they're going to do with the house. So again, you got to plan and communicate. But you put your kids on the ladybird deed. You still pay all the bills. You're still living in the house. You're responsible for everything. But when you die, the house passes to the kids without probate. See? So a good thing. So if you've done a will, and it was a long time ago, and your house isn't in a ladybird deed, and it's in a joint tenant's, get that out of there and put it in a ladybird deed. And that just means a trip to the attorney, a couple $100, and you can get that done.
And by the way, next week our special guest is Laura Freeling, our county registrar. She's a member here. Many of you know her. She's going to be giving us the ins and outs of ladybird deeds next week.
Okay. And so then the other one is a trust, and the trust is where all the money goes into, I call it a silo, I grew up in a farming community, so all the money goes into one account, like a trust, that's a trust, it's like a bank account, and then the trustee, that's the person that you trust to finalize your estate, and the trustee is going to write out all the checks, and this is where if you want one of your kids to get 20% of your estate, and maybe you want it over time, and you want the other kid, you know, if you want different things to happen, if you want your kids to receive different amounts of money over time instead of in a lump sum, or maybe grandkids, that's done in a trust. You can do charitable giving through the trust. Okay? Now, here's what I caution you on, is if you have a charitable gift to your church, and it's in the will, and let's say in your will it says, give 10% of my estate to Christ Lutheran Church, Stevensville, Michigan. Well, if all of you, if you've done your will properly, all of your assets are going to go lump sum, right? Those checks are going to get sent directly to your kids. The house is going to go directly to the kids, to your heirs, I should say, but I'm just assuming maybe kids, grandkids, nieces, nephews, whoever, those are your heirs. So if all of that is passing directly to the heirs, what assets are there going to be where that 10% gift is going to come from in the will? Probably won't. All of those beneficiaries are going to get their money. The house is going to go through. There won't be 10% of anything. Probate will be open and shut because there's no assets to probate. So it's an open and shut case, right? There's no gift. And I've had attorneys say that. I've asked them specifically, will that gift happen? No. Because anything that you have beneficiary, meaning payable on death, beneficiary, anything you have beneficiary supersedes anything that's said in the will or the trust. So you can have all kinds of beautiful things set in your will or in your trust, but if it's not beneficiary in that way, it's not going to happen. Okay, so something to go home and check on. All right, and I can follow up with you and we can look at that. So, and a trust is the same way. If you say, I want to give 10% of the trust to, let's say, Christ Stevensville, but in the trust, you've only put the house. Now, that's fine. Let's say the house is worth $200,000. And all your other assets, you said, well, we're going to just beneficiary those POD, right to the kids, to the grandkids, whatever. They're getting lump sums. But the house is going through the trust. And let's just say, you go, well, we have a $500,000 estate. In your mind, you're thinking, well, when we die, the church will get somewhere around $50,000. 10% of $500,000, right? But wait a minute. In the trust, all you have is the house. The house is only worth $200,000. Uh-oh, what's 10% of $200,000? 20. See where it's different? So you got to also make sure that the assets are in the trust to make sure that the gift is actually going to be what you want it to be. And that's, again, we don't talk about that. I've seen that happen many times, so you wouldn't be my first to see that, okay? Any questions on that so far? Okay, your heads are all spinning, right? You're all thinking, what do we have? Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. I know, I get that. So gift planning, this is where I come in. We're helping you understand what is the best asset to give, what's the best method to give that, what's the best way to give those gifts, and what's the best gift to family and to ministry. Did you know you have some assets that are great to give to your family, and there's some assets that you may have that are really great to give to the church? Because Christ Stevensville is a 501c3. You know what that means?
No.
That means what?
Tax exempt.
Tax exempt, right. Anything that says 501c3 after it means it does not pay taxes. So if you have taxable assets like IRAs, 401ks, those types of assets, and when you take money out, you pay tax on that. But if you gift that to Christ Stevensville, they don't pay tax on it. Okay, so let's make sure we're giving the right kind of assets to the church and the right kind of assets to our family. So that's really the foundational part of gift planning. So it's really great to be able to understand. I've had people with multi-million dollar estates, and we'll sit down and we'll look at it all, and I'll say, okay, so do you understand how all of this is going to pass on to your kids? And they say, no. Nope, the attorney just wrote this up. We don't know what this means. Okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's see if we can decipher it a little bit and go from there. Okay? So that's where it all comes together. So our current stewardship efforts, you know, our churches, we encourage everyone to be 100% stewards. We're stewarding every day, aren't we?
Yeah.
You're stewarding not just the gifts of assets that you have, but hopefully you're stewarding things like your faith life, right? You might be stewarding grandkids or your own children. We never stop being parents. I'm a nana. And I've got two little granddaughters, and even now, I pray for them every day. Even my adult children, I'm praying for them every day. Yeah, we're stewarding all the time. And so that's what God calls us to be, our stewards, and the blessings that He gives us. But the truth is, only 50% of people even have a will or a trust. So you might be thinking, good for me. I'm one of those 50%. I have a will or I have a trust. Great. Here's the truth, though. Sometimes people say, we don't want to make a will. It's just really complicated. We don't understand it. It just gives me a headache, right? There's taxes involved on that. Look at the second one. Fear of facing death. If I make a plan, I'm going to die. You guys, everybody in here, you know your birth dates?
Yeah.
Okay, raise your hand if you know your death date. I know. We don't know when we're we're going to die. It could be this afternoon. We don't know. So let's have a plan. Let's make sure our plans are in place. And let's make sure we've communicated our plan to our loved ones. Don't keep them in hiding. Don't keep it secret that, you know, your kids are going, I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. Well, they need to know. They need to know who the important people are, who to contact, right? People say they don't have anything or they don't have enough. Well, you may not have a huge amount, but you still have a plan. You still are stewarding that all the way through until God calls you home, right? And every time you, when you do a plan, you always want to review it every 3 to 5 years. When you work with me, I'll follow up with you every 3 years. Anything changed? Do we need? I just did that on the way here yesterday. Stopped in Sturgis and met with a couple. Do we need to update anything? Let's take a look at it all. And yeah, you know what? They do. They want to update some stuff. Great. Your plans can change while you're still living. That's a good thing, okay? Some people think you're too young. You're healthy. I know you're all young. You've got years to go. But, you know, there are people walking around that they just think, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to tell you right now, talk to your kids, your grandkids. Even they need plans. They need to have plans in place. People are saying they're too busy. Yeah, we're all busy, but take the time to do this. It's really not that hard. And the way we do it at the foundation, the way I'll do it with you through the lifetime plan for giving, we're biting off one piece of the elephant at a time. We're not eating it all in one big chunk, okay? And attorneys are expensive. Well, let me tell you, not having a plan, anybody know how expensive that is? And not only is it expensive financially to your loved ones, it's also expensive emotionally and relationally to your loved ones because it's causing friction. Now, who's in charge? Sorry, my phone's ringing. Who's in charge? Who's gonna take care of this? One of the kids steps in and, hey, who are you? How did you get in charge? Right? Now there's friction. How come you got more? Why isn't this divine? Oh my goodness. Have you heard about those kind of situations? Have you also heard about the ones where mom and dad had everything planned out? And they had everything. I even give you a funeral document. You plan out your funeral. Mom and dad, it all just went so smoothly. We just came in and all the plans, we knew the plans, we knew who was in charge, we knew how everything was going to flow. Yeah. Yeah. You heard those kind of stories too?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And it's a whole difference with the family, isn't it, Pastor Meese?
Absolutely.
Yeah, whole different family situation. They're a different dynamic. So it's an important thing to be communicating. This is not something that you want to hide and keep a secret from your children. This is something you want to talk about with your loved ones and let them know. Not necessarily amounts of money. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about plans. Okay? Sharing that. So then also with those stewardship efforts, okay, those 50% of you that were patting yourselves on the back, look at that next statistic. 70% of you need to review your plan. I've got people that will say, oh, we're all set. We did our will 20 years ago. Oh, well, let's take a look. We need to review a few things. There's been changes in laws, changes in tax laws, right? And then here's the one that we really look at and focus on is for what I do is it's set only 7 to 12% of people have any kind of gift to the church. Now, you're not a bad person if you just haven't done that yet, but let's get it done. Now's the opportunity to get that done, okay? So that is true. And do you know where most people, if they do leave a charitable gift, do you know what organization tends to be the biggest organization that people leave gifts to?
Uncle Sam.
The most popular one? Well, aside from Uncle Sam, yeah, that is one. What charity? Uncle Sam is not a charity. What
he
charity do people tend to leave their gift to when they call home to have
ESPCA.
Yeah, Humane Society. Yeah. That's what it is. Little Fifi. I mean, I've heard people that have given millions of dollars to the Humane Society and forgotten to give anything to their church. And they were Lutherans. I've heard of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then some people think they don't leave a gift. They don't leave a gift because they don't want to take anything away from their kids. Well, we'll talk about all that. We'll see what you have and we'll see what you want to do with it. It's your blessings that you're stewarding, right? And then also people say, well, nobody ever asked me. I'm going to ask you, have you made a gift to your church in your estate plan when God calls you home? It's not going to leave your accounts until God calls you home. You're going to use that money. You're going to spend it. You're going to take your RMDs from it or whatever it is. You're going to steward it until you're home in heaven. And if you're married, that means both of you. But what I'm talking about is let's put a plan in place so that the buckets are in place. And when God calls you home, this is how the buckets are going to be filled. to the heirs, right, to the church that I care about, my ministries and charities that I care about. Let's get it in place.
I guess I should take a cue from you, too, and say, I'll ask you as well. Make sure you give a tithe to the church when you pass away.
There you go. There you go. So when do you update your estate plan? There's lots of different, we call them life changes or checkpoints. You sell a house. You get involved with a new organization, maybe a charitable organization. Maybe there's a wedding. Maybe there's a death. Maybe there's a birth. Maybe there's retirement. Maybe there's a sickness. And you want to make sure everything is up to date, right? New job. Anything. Any kind of life change. So again, every 3 to 5 years. So if none of that's happening and it's just been a few years, let's get those documents out. And if you don't know where they are, it probably means you need to find them and review them. Okay? So we go through this 4-step process. This is in your folders. It's on the right-hand side. And it says Lifetime Plan for Giving. And this is the 4-step process. When we meet, we'll meet confidentially. We'll meet privately. We can meet here at the church or we can meet in your home. And the first step we're going to do is the discovery step. And that's where if you're interested in meeting with me, you'll fill out that response sheet when we're done here today. And I'll give you one of these survey guides, these booklets. And this is where you just fill out who are the important people, the kids, the grandkids, or if there's nieces and nephews, whoever that might be. And then you're also going to share with me what are your assets, what are the liabilities, you know, what do you have, those kind of things. And the really cool page on here, one of my favorites, are the stewardship goals. What are you, if you're married, husband and wife, each fill this out. What are your stewardship goals when God calls you home? You don't have this booklet in your folder. You'll get this at the end today. But this is where you're going to tell me, you're going to give me a roadmap. Julie, this is what we want to do while we're living, and this is what we want to do when God calls us home. And from that, I'm going to come back maybe in 3 weeks to a month, and we're going to do a plan design. I'm going to share with you maybe 2 or 3 different plan designs. Here's how you can pass along things to the kids, even if you have a trust or a will. Doesn't mean we're going to change that, but I'm going to help you understand it. So here's how things will pass to the kids, and then here's ways you can leave gifts to Christ Stevensville or any other charities or ministries that you want to leave gifts to. I'll leave those with you. I've had people take those to their financial planner. I've had them take them to their kids and show the kids. Absolutely, it's not a secret. But then I'm going to follow up with you again. We're going to have another meeting, and the summary meeting is where you say, we like this plan, and so what do we need to do to get this in place? Might mean updating beneficiaries. It might mean that the foundation attorneys put together some documents for you, and we'll get those documents together. Again, that's free of charge, right? And then the 4th step, the implementation step, is if you need to go to the attorney. Now, if you have to go to an attorney for your will or to amend your trust, you know, update anything, you'll pay for that part of it. But the documents, the work that we do at the foundation, that's all free of charge to you, okay? And so the implementation also means I'm going to follow up with you to make sure all the beneficiaries are in order. We're going to make sure that there's no, oh, I think I did that. No, we're going to make sure that it is in the proper order. So that's what's called the lifetime plan for giving. So we're going to also talk about funeral planning in there, right? We're going to talk about how do you want things to look when God calls you home. What's your Bible verses? What's your hymns that you want, right? Pastor Measel, he may know them already, but let's get them down on paper, okay? So we're going to walk you through the planning process and help you with those powers of attorney. Powers of attorney are things that are in place, people that are in place while you are living, but you cannot make decisions for yourself. Now, you can have, if you're married, you can have your spouse. You can have each other. But what happens if neither one of you can make those decisions anymore? So you need to have a successor power of attorney for medical and financial. Okay? Those end when you die. Okay? They do not wrap up your estate. They don't have any legal attachments to your estate or any decision making after you're called home to heaven. Sometimes people are confused about that. So I just want you to understand that powers of attorney end when your life ends. That's when your trustee or your personal representative will step in and take over. It can be the same person, but you gotta have it written down on legal documents. And then naming the guardians, if you've got kids, now I don't think any of you probably have any younger kids under 18. Is anybody in here with kids under 18? No. I never know, yeah. They cannot receive large sums of money. So you're gonna need to name, if you've got grandkids, nieces, nephews, those kind of things. They need to name a guardian for those kids. Otherwise, guess who gets to decide that? the state of Michigan will get to decide. So if you've got grandkids, you might want to have a conversation, or great-grandkids, you want to have a conversation with the parents to say, have you guys named guardians? Do you know what happens if you don't have a plan? The state of Michigan takes your kids and says, here's who's going to raise them now. I've shared that once in a presentation, and the lady came up to me afterwards, and she said, we definitely need to make a plan because my sister lives in the same town as me, and the courts would probably give my kids to her, and I do not want her to raise my kids. Well, then you better have a plan, right? And you better make sure it's written down, okay? And then reviewing all those ownership issues. You've heard me talk power or payable on death. That's huge. Remember, that supersedes anything in those legal documents. That's even been brought to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has also said, yes, powers of payable on death supersedes wills and trusts. So if they agree, great. But if they don't, they're going to look for who is your beneficiary. That's what's going to take over. That's what's going to take precedent. Okay? And then the other thing is the family blessing. This is on the left side of your folder. There are some templates in here. I want to encourage you. You can start doing this at any time. These are not legal documents. There's two pieces of paper in here. These are sample Christian preambles and family blessings. The reason we don't make them legal documents is because if you ever want to change these, if they are in your legal documents, you got to go to the attorney, and you got to pay billable hours to the attorney to change them. So we just say keep them outside of your estate plan, but keep them with your papers, okay? So this is where you're just going to write down your faith statement, your family blessing. What do you want to say to your loved ones before God calls you home? Because here's the thing, too. You write this out, and then share it with your loved ones while you're still walking and breathing on this earth. Let them hear from you how much you love the Lord, how much the Lord has worked in your life, how thankful and grateful you are for everything the Lord has given to you. Share that with your loved ones before you're in that casket in front of the church there and everyone's sitting there mourning your loss. Let them hear from you the importance of your faith life. Okay? And have that conversation with them. And do it often. Don't just do it once, but do it often. It can be a very healing experience also for your family, especially if there's ever been any tension. It can bring up some conversations, yes. But it can be very healing, and it can be a real faith-building experience for your loved ones there. I know we're cutting short, but yes, we are. Okay, real quick, the LCMS Foundation, in 2023, we were busy. We've been busy working on helping other Lutheran members and Lutheran entities like seminaries, universities, churches, districts, with charitable giving. And so last year alone, the foundation, the LCMS Foundation, distributed 190 gifts for today. So that was money that was sent to the foundation to get it out to churches, schools, ministries. $38.3 million is what we gave to because of plans that were put in place. Right? And those went to churches and schools, other LCMS entities, Michigan District, but other districts, seminaries, universities, and other charities. Doesn't all have to be LCMS. So it could be other charities also. And then we put in the 22 gift plans. We were busy last year also. We put 803 gifts for tomorrow. These are gifts that, you see that $139.5 million? That's still sitting in those people's accounts. They're still using that money. But we document it. We get all the information for those assets so that the foundation can be there to assist to make sure that the family and that ministries receive those gifts. So we don't charge for that. It's just we've helped churches before where we get this a lot right now. A lot of times investment companies, you know, Fidelity, Edward Jones and all that, they come up with all kinds of excuses not to release funds from IRA assets, especially to churches. We're finding this more and more. And so what one of our attorneys, we have three at the foundation, one of our attorneys, now you can see how important this is, Sarah is her name. Sarah is an attorney that all she does is contact these companies, and she has documentation. She works with families. She works with the churches. She gets the information and says, calls the company and says, what's the problem? Here's the information. Get that check sent over to that church because it is becoming more and more of an issue. Okay? So it's not necessarily always a plan that the foundation's going to be involved in, but it may be something down the road that we can help your family answer some questions. If we have the information, it sure does make it easier for us. So I get those. I get that documentation from you, and we just keep it on file. Okay. All right, and that's what the gift plans, endowment funds, split interest, donor advised funds. That's what all that was. So there's a giving plan sheet in your folders on the right side. This just kind of gives you more of a definition of what a bequest gift is, charitable trust, all these different charitable. These are all charitable giving plans that we offer through the LCMS Foundation. Now, you may only use one of these. You might use two of them. It varies. You're not all the same. You all have different needs, different concerns, different family situations, different goals, and so it's going to be, we always say gift planning is an art, it's not a science. And it means that's what's so important about that survey. Somebody will listen to you, guide you through it, and help you discover what's the best way to make those gifts. Okay? Real quickly, I'm going to just share with you a design plan of Martin and Catherine Luther. This is in your folders also, so you can see this up close. And if you look, it should say current plan at the top of Martin and Catherine Luther, and it's up here on the board. You can see Martin and Catherine's assets all across the top. This is what your design would look like. Not necessarily the same amount of money, but you have real estate, personal property, other investments, life insurance, and retirement and annuities. Those are the four boxes we work out of. So in Martin and Catherine's case, they have a $2,672,400 estate. Now, you may be going, we don't have anywhere near that. That's okay. You may say, we got a lot more than that. That's okay. This is just an example. All right. So you don't have to have millions of dollars to do a gift plan, right? You just have to have a heart that wants to give to the Lord. Okay. So Martin and Catherine said, well, the family gets everything. Not giving anything to the church, the family gets everything. I guess the 95 Theses did Martin, and I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so family gets everything. Look what the family got. $2,162,400. Whoa, wait a minute. Who else got a gift? Look at the red number there. Who got a gift? There's no estate tax. It was tax on the retirement and annuities. These are taxable assets. Mm-hmm. And because Martin and Catherine said, oh, family gets everything, those got taxed somewhere between, it's also based on the heir's income levels, not your income level. It's going to get taxed on your heir's income. So if they're high income earners, that could bump them even higher. Okay? But that's where that $510,000 in taxes come from. So now, I'll turn the paper over. Martin and Catherine Luther talked with me. We went through a survey. We put together a gift plan. And Martin and Catherine said, well, we still want the family to receive a gift. Well, absolutely. We're not going to take away from them. So Martin and Catherine said, through our trust, let's just assume they had a trust, through the trust, the family received the first three boxes. All the assets in the first three boxes went directly to the family at their death. $972,400. Okay? So then, let's say there were three kids, so they each got a third. All right? But then what also Martin and Catherine said was, well, we're going to put these retirement assets now keep in mind, they're both called home to heaven. These assets are not leaving their accounts until they're both home in heaven. And now, those monies, whatever is in that pot, if it's $1.7 million, great. If it's $700,000, whatever. If it's $500,000, whatever it is, Martin and Catherine are going to spend it. They're going to use it. But let's say it's 1.7, that goes into their charitable remainder trust. Now the foundation is going to become the trustee. Martin and Catherine are in heaven. The foundation becomes the trustee of that money and distributes it out to the heirs for 20 years at a 5% distribution. You can go all the way up to 6.5% distribution on that. But it distributes to the heirs. And here's another thing. You can make the church one of your heirs on that. You could say that the kids all get a third and the church gets, you know, a 5% gift every year for 20 years. Christ Stevensville would receive a gift from your charitable trust. And then at the end of that 20 years, so the family, and let's just say the church, got $85,000 in income. Okay, so now keep it its income. So yeah, there's tax. But it's over 20 years. All right, the new way that the IRS says you can distribute IRA assets to the kids, the IRS has now said, now it's 10 years. They got rid of the stretch IRA. That's gone. 2019 changed that. And so now it's just 10 years. But this puts back 20 years. The Charitable Remainder Trust allows you to distribute out to the heirs for 20 years. And the beauty of this is, there's still a gift to church and ministry at the end of those 20 years because that money was invested, right? And the interest was paid out. The earnings were paid out to the kids, to the heirs. And then somewhere in the ballpark of $1.7 million was gifted. And Martin and Catherine would say, tell us the foundation we want. You can do, they could do percentages. It could be 80% goes to Christ Stephenville, 10% goes to this ministry, 5%. And the foundation will write out those checks and send that money out. And I've actually gotten to distribute two checks to churches in the 4 years that I've been doing this. I didn't do the charitable trust, but someone else did, and they put it together 20 years ago. And the trust had paid out to the kids. In one situation, there were 5 kids. And I went to the church, and the pastor was like, this is just a huge blessing because we're redoing our parking lot and the roof on the church and school. And here I come in with this really nice check. And the kids were all there at the service. And they were talking about mom and how she sold the family. They told me the whole story of the family farm. And she put the earnings from it into, from selling it, put it into the charitable trust at her death. And it was a blessing. It was a real blessing for the kids. And you can do that for your grandkids too. Yeah, it's a really cool thing. So that's just one plan. Now, here's what sometimes people will say. I don't want the church to wait 20 years to receive a gift from me, and I want the kids to get all of that. Okay, well, let's do two things. We can do two things at once. We can do a bequest gift, meaning immediate gift. Let's make it out of those IRA assets because they are taxable, right? IRA assets, you could say, we're going to give 10% of that directly to the church when we die. In this case, if it was $1.7 million, the church would receive $170,000. And then 20 years later, the church is going to get a gift of, let's just say it's somewhere in the ballpark of about $1.5 million. Because you paid out part of it already to the church. The kids are still going to get their share, and then the church will get another gift. So there's all kinds of ways to do that. And we can talk about that if that's something that interests you. But there's other types of charitable plans too. A bequest gift, a percentage of an asset, is a simple and easy way to leave a gift to the church. And we'll talk about that when we meet. Okay?
Question
so
right
I mentioned,
there.
I'm sorry?
Question right there, Bob.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The part that the kids get from that,
mm-hmm.
That's still taxable to them.
That is income. But remember,
but they don't have to pay that part that is given to the church
no,
or whatever.
That's right.
So it makes their taxes less.
Yes. Lessens the tax for the kids. Yes. Yeah. Wheels are spinning. Think about it. Yeah. I mentioned this already. That stretch IRA for 20 years, that's gone. 2019 changed all that. So now it is only 10 years. And your kids inherit that or whoever you POD that money to. And by the way, if you have your IRA going through the trust, you need to get that changed. You need to change the beneficiary, and it should go directly to the kids. Because putting it in the trust now can cause the trust to get immediately taxed. Because that transfer of IRAs gets one taxation, one transfer, okay? And so if it goes into the trust, into your revocable trust, it gets taxed. If it goes into a charitable trust, we're a 501c3. We don't pay tax, see? So it doesn't pay tax until your kids receive it from the charitable trust. So there's the difference. Okay? But anyway, and then also qualified charitable distributions. I've got a flyer up here. If you are not familiar with that, and if you are at 70 and a half, and definitely if you're 73, this is something, if you're not taking advantage of this, this is something you can be doing now. And that is, if you're taking a required minimum distribution, that's what the government tells you you have to take from your IRA. So let's say your required minimum distribution is $20,000 a year. And let's say you want to give $5,000 a year to the church. Well, all you do is you call up whoever is your custodial company or your financial planner, and you say, send $5,000 directly from my required minimum distribution. Send that to Christ Lutheran. Get the tax ID number from the church office, okay? Send that over to Christ Lutheran. Send me the $15,000 into my bank account. You're going to pay tax on the $15,000. That's income. But you're not going to pay tax on the $5,000 that went to the church. Okay, that's called a charitable, qualified charitable distribution, a QCD. Sometimes it's called an IRA rollover. Here's the beauty of that. Let's say you've got an IRA and you really don't need it. You've got a pension, the house is paid for, maybe you're not using much of it, you're paying tax on that income. Make that your charitable giving vehicle. Use your IRA assets to give to ministries and charities for the rest of your life. And you won't pay any tax on it. The only tax you're going to pay is when it goes into your account. So if you keep it out of your account and you direct it to Christ Stevensville, you direct it, you know, to the ministries and charities you want to send it to, and the foundation will even, will help you if you want to send it to the foundation, and we'll write the checks. If you get some pushback from an investment company, they may only give you one QCD per year or something like that. You can send it to the foundation and we'll send the checks out for you to the ministries, okay? But that's something to keep in mind, and I'll tell you, every church should have a ministry of QCD. Educate your people. How many of you are aware of this? Okay. And if you're taking advantage of it, great. If you're not, I brought some flyers here. Yeah. Take advantage of it. Yes.
So, I know you'll get to the next one, but what is the minimum distribution?
Required minimum distribution?
Yes.
Well, it depends. It depends on, okay, you're 73, and it depends on how much is in your IRA, what is the amount in that IRA assets. And then it goes, and it's based on your life expectancy. So if you're expected, the government will tell you what they expect you to live to. Isn't that nice? I think right now, honestly, I think they lowered it. I think it's 85. It used to be 87, and I think after COVID, they lowered it to 85 because people were dying. But it's based on your age, it's based on your life expectancy, and it's based on the amount that you have in your IRA. The government does the calculations. You don't tell the government, they tell you. Even though it's your hard-earned money, don't get started on that. Okay, all right. So first thing I would ask you to do, go home this week, write out your statement of faith to your family. That's something you can do. You don't need my help to do that. I'll help you if you want me to, but write that out. Secondly, fill out this response sheet that was in your folder, and I'll set up a time. I'll meet with you. I'll get in touch with you. We'll set up a time to visit. I'll come to Stevensville, and we can meet in your home, or we can meet here at church. And let's review your plan. Let's talk about what you have in place and maybe what changes you're looking at making in your plan. And I'll help you understand how you're gifting to the family, to your heirs, and then also how you're gifting or how you can gift to ministries and charities. Okay? Any questions on that? I know it was a quick, but I didn't quite make it today.
No, you can go another 5 minutes or whatever.
Well, does anybody have it? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I do.
Sure.
So you mentioned that the investment firms are reluctant to send money to churches.
Mm-hmm. It's becoming a more of an issue.
So hopefully that's not true for Thrivent.
We have Thrivent. My husband and I have Thrivent products. I'm not bashing on Thrivent, but you do need to double check your beneficiaries with Thrivent. I have found, this is personal experience also, you've got to check your beneficiaries. They are not all that efficient at updating beneficiaries. So you need to make sure, if you have Thrivent accounts, you've got to make sure you see that either on your account, if you pull it up online, or you have the documentation, and you see that it is POD to the person or the group wherever you want it to go. Because I've seen people that have struggled with trying to get their beneficiaries changed through Thrivent, and they just, for some reason, and I don't know what the issue is, but they drag their feet on it. So make sure that if you've got Thrivent accounts, double check those. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say about it. Any other questions?
So let me summarize a little bit about kind of what you do and for everybody here and for my own sake as well. If you don't have a will or a trust or you don't have a plan in place, then you can help get that started in collecting data using this and then come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. And somebody says, well, I already have a will or I already have a trust, but are your beneficiaries properly defined and is it going to work the way you think it is? Because I understand. You can say, well, I went to an attorney. Well, the attorney's just going to do what you say.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily doing what you intend. Mm-hmm. That's where Julie can come in. She can help you look at all your assets, look at your plan if you already have one in place, make sure it's going to work the way it works. And somebody last night mentioned, if you ask an attorney, you go to an attorney to get a will or a trust, or you go to them to change it, and you start asking them questions, you're on billable time with them.
Oh, sure.
Versus if you talk with Julie, if she comes, she can educate you, explain everything, come up with the plan, and then when you meet with an attorney, It's much more simple, and their time required is shorter, and you kind of do the legal stuff, and then you've got your plan in place.
And the beauty is we have three attorneys at the foundation. Two are tax attorneys, so when you have questions, and if I don't know the answer, I just shoot out a text to Stacy or Paul, and I usually get an answer pretty quick. I mean, they're very good at letting me know. And anytime, any gift planning that we do, their eyes are on it. They have to review it. They have to make sure that it is, you know, pass muster, right, that it's going to work the way you want it to work. And they may even throw out questions. Hey, have they thought about, or hey, did you look at this? You know, so they're involved in all of that. So in the gift planning part of it, yes.
Another thing that I'm impressed with or would recommend for Julie and the foundation is it seems like modern-day life has become awfully complex. All of this stuff, right? IRAs, deeds to the house, you know, pension funds, all of this kind of stuff. Doesn't she have a Lutheran teacher's approach to explain things in a way that are understandable and make sure it's doing what you want it to do?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I never would have thought of until yesterday and today is you may have certain different types of assets. Some of them are taxable,
mm-hmm.
and some are not.
Right.
So you want to make sure you've got, and see, an attorney may not care. He's just doing what you want, filling it out, the paperwork, and filing it. But she can double check for you, with you, to make sure the non-taxable assets are what's giving to your kids. And the taxable ones, that's where the bucket where you give to the church, because the church doesn't have to pay taxes. So you can make sure your assets are being divided up in the amounts and in the right directions
for
things.
You could be a gift planning counselor.
No, I'm fine where I am. I think they'd rather have me here.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Just so here's an example. I met with a lady a couple weeks ago, and she had life insurance that was going to go to the church. And she had her 401k, her IRA, was going to her son and daughter. And so we reviewed it, and I said, well, you understand that that's taxable. Your kids are going to pay tax on that. If you gave that to the church wouldn't pay tax on it. Life insurance, the kids don't pay tax on it. So she said, oh, so I should flip it? And I said, exactly. You could flip it, and that way the kids, and she said, you know, my son has told me the same thing, and I just never listened to him. So now she did it. She flipped it. And her son, I'm sure, was just like, and the same thing with the lady bird deed. She said, my son has told me the same thing about that lady bird deed. Well, now she's getting it in place. Real quick, there in this booklet, you take one of these. In the back of the booklet, our attorneys put together a lot of great information about estate planning and taxation of assets. Stepped up basis, if you don't know what that means, they give you a really easy understanding of what is stepped up basis, capital gains tax. I know for some of you, you're going like, oh my gosh, this is not. I'm a Lutheran teacher, and I just found this stuff so fascinating and interesting. When I started doing all this, I was amazed. Yeah, I know my husband's like, no, not everybody's wired like Julie, so I know. But do take this guide. Hand me your response sheet back, and I'll give you this guide, and then we'll set up a time to meet. And even if, like I said, even if you think you got it all in place, let's just review it, okay? Any other questions, comments? Was this helpful for you?
Yes.
Got the wheels turning?
Yep.
Okay. Well, fill out those response sheets.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Julie. I think this has been very helpful for me as well, personally. I need to talk to my wife, Jill, and we need to meet with you and kind of get an estate plan. So.
Well, and one of the things I'm talking to the leadership here about is growing the endowment. And the reason we're so fervent about growing the endowment for churches is because you all are wonderful stewards, and you've been great savers. But the next generation's coming up. They're not set up the same way. So those wonderful offerings and tithes that are coming to Christ Stevensville may not be there in the same way that they are today. And so one of the things you can do is we can have an endowment set up, and I think there is one set up, but it's kind of, we're dusting it off, and wherever you decide to invest it, I'm encouraging them to look at CEF for right now and invest some of those funds at CEF, but they're going to make that decision. But, let's look at how can we help the church in the future. When we're all long gone to heaven, we want this place to be here for grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. We want the gospel to continue to be shared. And the way that's going to happen also is, sad to say this, but you're going to take money. And so helping grow that endowment, helping churches understand how endowments can be a blessing, for future growth and future stability is something we also really focus on. Okay.
Yep. She met with our parish planning and our church leaders yesterday and to give us some ideas on how the church can put its money in various accounts and things with CEF, et cetera, to make the best use of the money. So she's helping the church as an organization as well as can help you individually. All right? So in the interest of time, let's wrap it up and close it up. Julie will linger for another 5-10 minutes or whatever needed for questions if you need be. Schedule an appointment with her and she'll help you with an estate plan that is comprehensive over everything. That's wonderful. All right, so let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thanks for coming. Have a good day.